I call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, February 14th, 2025. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off all cell phones. Committee members present, Senator Hughes, Senator Clayman, Senator Kawasaki, and myself, Senator Giesel. Online is Senator Wilkowski, who is the vice chair, and Senator Dunbar. Senator Myers is excused today. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you, Heather and Zach, who are keeping our minutes of this meeting and running the audio. Today we have a presentation from Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, otherwise known as ADA. Today they will be presenting an update to the committee, and so I would invite Randy Rowe. He is the executive director of ADA, to be present. Online, Brandon Brzezinski and Gene Kornmuller is also present from ADA. So just to let you know that, Mr. Raro. So I will let you introduce yourself and any staff that are with you and proceed with your presentation. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Randy Raro. I am the executive director for ADA. With me today is Janae Erickson, who I'm borrowing from the Department of Commerce to help me run the slides. And I have Ms. Morledge is with us, and Mr. Sullivan is our in-house attorney.
Great. I'll let you go ahead then and proceed with your presentation.
Sure. Thank you very much. I wanted to start, Madam Chair, just by going to slide one, which gets into our mission and purpose. And it's really a two-pronged purpose. It's a very simple mission, but it's got a unemployment to jobs component, and then it's got a financing bank type of component, both of them blended together. And that those two things are what we try to achieve with everything we do. And we count our results. We've been fairly successful at it, I believe, and we're focused on it very strongly going forward. Next slide. A little bit of history. It was a little interesting. One of the first bills, I think, that was passed after statehood, 61. Statehood was 59. Senate Bill 153 was passed, and legislators at that time recognized the need for financing support for the new state. We were supposed to develop a lot of our resources to support ourselves. Provide financing for seasonal, what was a lot of seasonal businesses, timber, fishing, things like that. And so they recognized that purpose. It was one of the first bills in the first 2 years after statehood that they passed. They revisited it in 67 and reworked the bill, Madam Chair, and passed House Bill 14. And House Bill 14 is really where a lot of our organic statutes come from today. A lot of House Bill 14 is still in effect on our books. They made a couple, legislators at that time made a couple of policy decisions that are still important for ADA. One is they separated ADA's assets and management from the legislature. So they agreed that the real and personal property of ADA would be set aside. It would grow based on ADA's activities, and it would be subject to allocation by the board of the authority. And that's a very important part of our history, with one exception. They did provide that the operating budget of ADA would still remain subject to legislative review. And that's still on the books today. That's a little bit of our organic past and what we rely on even today. This is our current statutory language, our mission statement. The legislature finds and determines and declares that there are areas of the state in which seasonal and non-seasonal unemployment exist. And they viewed unemployment as a serious menace, right, to the health and general welfare of Alaskans, not only in those areas but to the entire state. And so there's always been, for ADA, a very strong focus on jobs. You know, what we're doing, actions we take, you know, should produce jobs. And that is something that we focus on still today.
So now we're on slide six.
Correct, Madam Chair. On this slide, if the chair would like to accommodate it, there is a short few minute video of Chief Fred Sun speaking about the importance of jobs in his village.
That'd be great.
More than anything from our elders, we've learned that we have to think about the future generations, not ourselves, not people that don't live here. We have to think about the young people that are still in school, don't even know what they want to be, because we want to give them opportunities, choices. The Ambler Road to me mostly means jobs and opportunities.
When a young kid gets a job, I watch my sons do it. Three of them so far. When they get their first job, big boost in the way they feel, the way they live their lives. We always hear in our region that we have the highest suicide rate than anywhere. That's probably why, one of the main reasons. They have no job, they have no future, nothing to look forward to. But guess what? When they get their first paycheck, holy cow, I see it lift up my son's spirits. And my sons are the ones everybody worries about the most. That group of people, you know, young men. They're so suicidal in our region, in our state. And I know for a fact, just by watching my sons grow, that jobs help. Jobs help a lot.
We do spend a fair amount of time. I spend a fair amount of time personally, Madam Chair, out in these small villages, and it really gives you a sense, you know, for what's going on in the village. So, and we, what Chief Fred described, we hear almost everywhere we go. But it is helpful to get that input from the local tribal leaders and others. They're closest on the ground. So we do focus. We think jobs, you know, jobs can mean one thing to one person, but jobs, I think, in rural Alaska is super important. So, next.
Slide seven?
Correct, Madam Chair. Slide seven is kind of, we heard from Chief Fred, but this is kind of the more professional study views of things. This was a study where they went out and surveyed a number of rural Alaskans, and then they reviewed a lot of the literature on suicide rates in rural Alaska natives. And you can read the bullets. It's clear that, you know, again, just as Chief Fred said, the research bears out that not having opportunities, not having access even to mental health by road, you know, it's a concern. It has an impact. So we're at ADA, we look at all these things when we're working on projects. This is just a quick note on, you know, often I hear on the radio or during driving or something that the unemployment rate is very low. We don't really need to worry about it. But in fact, if you look at the labor participation rate, which is, I think, the true figure, right, where you pick up the people who've given up hope of finding a job, and then you see that number is very, I think, concerning. It's almost 4 out of 10 Americans, and similar numbers for Alaskans, many of which have just given up hope. So pretty high number for Alaska. Similar numbers. We've come back a little bit since COVID, but not a whole lot. You know, 4 to 5%. So still a major issue, I think, in Alaska.
Yes, Mr. Raro, so that was on slide 9. Let's pause there for a moment. I just want to check in with committee members, see if there's any questions. Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this is the most appropriate place, but the Department of Labor and Workforce Development every February comes out with their report of non-resident hires in the state of Alaska. Their report this year highlighted the fact that the total number of non-residents by percentage has grown. And in fact, in industries that are typically non-resident, non-resident heavy, like the summer tourist season, visitor season, or fisheries, every industry had shown more out-of-state non-Alaska hires than prior years. And it's a trend that looks really bad as you trend 10 years. So can you explain sort of that and maybe how you're working to counteract that, or if there's things that you can do that might improve that situation?
Sure. Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, it is a very disturbing trend. When we have so many people unemployed, you know, that are Alaskans that are not getting into that workforce, there has to be some connections made, I think, particularly in rural Alaska, so that some of the training and the efforts are getting out in the village. One thing we've noticed is a lot of rural residents either don't have the funds or don't like to travel maybe to the urban areas. But there was a project in Hughes, the road project. It was small, maybe $3 million. And the local chief there got 20 kids together from three of the villages and got them organized into a road crew. And, man, I mean, it was amazing to see these kids, you know, just really enjoy working. But it took his personality, I think, Chief Bettis's personality to kind of snap these kids together. And you know, they were lined up when we visited with them. There were 20 of them from three different villages, and they were ready to work, and he had them ready to work. And there's something to get them to that stage. You know, we have to make that connection. And that probably goes for urban Alaska as well. There's something with kids, you know, getting them excited to work. You know, these kids couldn't wait to work. We had kids that had never driven before, and by the end of the project, they were driving a large dump truck. You know, so there is something that has to be done, because there's clearly a wrong way trend, right? When we're getting so many non-residents, it's definitely not what we want. And I don't know if it takes a partnership with tribes, with State Department of Labor, the Workforce Investment Board, I think, is making the rounds in the halls today. But somehow there's got to be a bringing together and then a focus on the kids. You know, right out of high school, you know, they graduate, and then it's like, what's next? You know, and you want them plugged in, and even maybe working with them in even middle school. You know, I'm not sure. I wish I had a very easy answer for you, but it's a problem, and we've got to find a way to get the kids in the workforce, or it just doesn't work.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a follow-up to that, as you're funding projects, is that part of what you're looking at, is that it's obviously part of your mission is employment, but are you looking at whether Alaskans will be employed? And I know sometimes we don't have the trained individuals and we have to bring them up from outside, but is that data that you consider when you're considering a project?
Absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we focus, for instance, on the Ambler Road project. We focus for bear guards, the cultural and historic work that we do. The first place we want to look is the communities closest to the road, since they know the area the best. But we are always, as we're developing projects, we're always thinking of where are we going to get the workers. It's not easy sometimes, but we definitely will always make an effort.
Very good follow-up.
And as follow-up, I guess I wasn't quite as clear. You're looking at that, but does that make a difference of whether you would fund a project? Would you be more apt to fund a project? Does it give them more points or whatever as you're weighing whether you're going to get behind a project? Does it make a difference if it's employing more Alaskans?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we haven't applied a criteria like that to whether a project gets funded. Usually on the financing side or the merits of a project, we're focused on that. But we are always looking to supplement, you know, a project with those persons nearest to it and most interested in it.
Thank you.
Good. Senator Wilikowski, Senator Dunbar, questions? Just checking in.
I don't have any questions.
All right.
No questions.
Thank you. Senator Klayman.
In looking at a lot of the projects you're talking about, a lot of these are their creation of jobs, you know, whether it's building bridges or other roads. But a lot of what we're experiencing in the lack of in-state employment is the lack of training. Can you identify some programs that you've been involved in that are really not so much about building a road, but more about investment in job training programs so that you actually start building the skills in-state to service the jobs that others may create?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Senator Klayman, we have worked on partnerships with DOT. DOT did get some training funds through their programs, through the STIP. We have applied to use some of those funds for job training, job readiness, and we'll focus on, assuming those funds come through, we'll focus on getting some training dollars and efforts right out in the communities, as well as MAPS and some other, you know, programs that are centrally located somewhere, but we'll be hoping to use those DOT funds for that.
Thank you. I see no other questions. I'll let you proceed.
Madam Chair, we're getting now into aid of financial information, just some highlights. We do have a 1.5 roughly billion net position. We increased 53 million roughly in over the last fiscal year. We did make a number of adjustments and changes in several programs, and we were able to achieve the highest statutory net income in the history of ADA at $65 million. We're not settled yet. We want to do better, and we were focused on even better returns in the future, and I think we can accomplish that. Our cumulative total running since 1997 of ADA dividends to the legislature and the Treasury is roughly $500 million, and the board declared a $20 million dividend approved for payment in FY 2026. And we've got a number of programs we'll maybe touch on later in the presentation, but I'm targeting doing even much better than these numbers in the next 1 to 2 years. So we're really focused on every segment of investment and opportunity that we have. We're focused on looking at it, reviewing it. Are we doing as good as we can, and how can we do better? So we're rolling all those together.
All right, so now we're on slide 12 for those following at home.
Thank you, Chair. This is just a breakdown pie chart of some of our how our assets break down. We have the largest slices of the pie, the green, I guess, light green, balance of loans finance. That's our loan participation program. So that is a program where local Alaskan banks come to us and say they have a customer who wants to go into business, but the bank is not willing to fund the entire amount needed to get the business up and running. And so we fill the gap at a fair interest rate, and that helps those businesses actually get over the top. That's our largest, I think, asset allocation out of the total. Purple is investment funds, and this is funds that have been managed by professional investment managers. They range from treasuries to bonds, all kinds of different fixed income. Our investment policy to date has been limited to fixed income investments with, frankly, low returns. And so we tackled that. We worked with the board, and we came up with a new investment policy that will let us allocate some funds to equities, more risk, but significantly greater return. And so that was approved, I think, in December by the board. And that should result in a significantly higher return from investments while still staying pretty conservative with fixed income. Our other largest slice of the pie is cash on hand at $345 million. However, if you follow that diagram over, you'll see that of that amount, the board has committed roughly $200 million to several projects, the Alaska Hotel Group, the Alyeskim methanol plant on the North Slope, and a revolving line of credit for HEX in Cook Inlet to drill for gas. And I think all those investments are very solid. We spent months, reviewing them. and the board approved them, and those should result in significant returns in the future, I think above 10% largely. And it'll help us build, and then we'll do more of these. You know, we'll just keep building and finding good projects. So we do spend people get frustrated with our underwriting process, but it's important, you know, to be very thorough. So next slide.
Before you leave this slide, Senator Kawasaki, I'll let you ask your question.
Yeah, I had a question because AGDC is on this, and we had AGDC a couple times before this committee. At the last committee hearing, I believe Frank Richards said that they did not need $50 million in the current budget, but they were going to come to you. And have they approached you already?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, they have. They applied for us roughly 6 months ago for a backstop / guarantee of some kind for feed work. A appropriation was submitted by the governor in his December budget based on work that staff did at ADA and some adjustments. We've since discovered we don't need the $50 million GF. We have a credit facility that will allow us to keep our funds in-house rather than have them leave the hands of ADA. And so we're confident that we can manage it without an appropriation.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Follow-up. Are you on the AGDC board, too?
No. Through the chair. I'm sorry. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah,
no.
Okay. So AGDC does not – said that they don't need the direct appropriation, but that's because they're coming to ADA for $50 million, and that's cash?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the credit facility that ADA staff and myself have come up with is a corporate guarantee. It's basically simply a contract that says if FID is not taken, ADA will backstop the cost for feed up to the amount actually expended. So there's no hard $50 million number. If feed costs are $20 million, that would be the maximum liability for ADA.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
No, let me think about it. Thanks.
Sure. So, yes, Senator Hughes.
Yeah, so I have a follow-up because there was some discussion whether that needed a legislative approval, and I understand in House Finance you have the statutory authority to do that. What you're talking about, the kind of a – I can't remember what you called it, corporate credit or something. So, but does that show up in the budget as receipt authority? Does it show up in our budget at all? Or you can do it independently, it doesn't show up, and it will not show up in our budget?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, it will not show up in the state budget, and that's because the source of funds, A, is not leaving ADA's hands, but B, according to the statutes for ADA, ADA receipts and ADA revenue over the years, which is what would be the source of this backstop, is not considered state quote-unquote funds. They're considered assets of the authority, and the legislature, through other statutes, I think it's 4488, 050, and 060, have delegated authority to the board to manage ADA assets. So there's a strict dividing line, so to speak, between ADA assets and state assets.
And follow-up, Senator Hughes.
And you mentioned that. I remember when you were talking about the history, the second major piece of legislation separated the assets from the operating budget. So we do approve your operating budget in our budget each year, and you're saying this fits in the assets, so therefore will not be reflected in our budget. Is that the sum?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's correct.
Thank you.
So as I look, Mr. Raro, at the cash on hand, $345 million, and the pending commitments, it looks like you've committed all of your cash on hand. Is that your normal approach? And if so, where's the commitment for the dividend owed to the state this year? Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, or to the chair. Ada has that account as cash on hand. I also can move funds from the investment account that are matured so that I wouldn't be, you know, like breaking a five-year CD or something that's got a time limit on it. But we have maturing funds every month, and we are moving to re-supplement, so to speak, the cash on hand account.
And from that reinfusion, you will pay a dividend to the state?
Through the chair, or to the chair, that's correct. We have roughly $140 million in room now. We like to keep $100 million in reserve for bonding and other things. But we have some room, and we will add maturing cash accounts, cash balances from the investments to the revolving fund as a transfer. And the dividend will come from there.
I see. Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, Senator Dunbar, questions?
I have some questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilkowski, please proceed.
Thank you. Randy, I thought I heard you say before that you expected to pay or you are paying a dividend of $20 million, and that's on assets of, I think you said, $1.2 billion. Is that accurate?
To the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is the dividend amount declared by the board, which is based not on total assets, but a statutory net income.
And if I could, Madam Chair, that equates to a return of about 1.6%. Is that correct?
To the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't know if the math is exactly correct, but that is based on the $66 million in statutory net income, which, according to statute, the dividend will be set at between 25 and 50% of the statutory net income. So I think it's roughly a 37.5% dividend.
And you do have your chief financial officer online if you need a lifeline, Mr. Raro. Senator Wilkowski, follow up.
Yeah, I do. On another topic, back to the $50 million backstop. I'm curious about the terms of that contract. In a contract, you have to have consideration. There has to be something of value exchanged, and I understand the value that Glenfarne is receiving, or AGDC is receiving, is that Ada's agreement to act as a backstop of $50 million, but what is Ada getting in return for that? Is Ada getting an equity stake in the project? Is Ada getting interest payments? Is Ada getting some sort of back-end payment? What is Ada receiving for that $50 million backstop?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is no final agreement signed with AGDC or Glenfarne yet, so the terms are still being negotiated. In terms of consideration, I can advise the chair and the members that there is a significant consideration positive for Ada for stepping forward. It's not settled. There's no final contract yet, but I can let you know there is a significant benefit to Ada, which means there's a significant benefit to the state and the dividend, et cetera, from our backstop.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
I'm curious what that benefit is, if you could expound on that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also curious, there was some talk by AGDC last week that AGDC might be subject to penalties if they didn't follow through with this deal. And I'm curious if you're aware of that and if you can talk more about that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm not aware of any details between AGDC and Glenfarne and penalties. I'm just not in that realm, I guess, of the contracts. In terms of, and I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of your question.
It was focused predominantly on the penalties.
Oh, yeah. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I just don't have a awareness of the terms of AGDC's contracts with Glenfarne.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, and if you could expound a little bit more on what the consideration is. You said it's a substantial benefit to the state. Is it monetary payments? Is it jobs? Is it what is it?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it is both. It is a return of jobs, not specific for Ada, but for Alaskans in general, that would result from the project. And it is a return of funds to Ada for taking the risk of the backstop.
Follow up?
If you could provide us the terms of that contract when it is in fact signed, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
If I could just follow up, Chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'm going to have to check with counsel. I'm under NDAs, you know, with the parties. I'm going to have to check and see what I can reveal and I'm not supposed to. But that is a rough outline of what we're working on.
Senator Dunbar, did you have any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director. I was wondering if you might be able to provide a little bit more detail of the reserve-based lending that the Ada is engaged with now in cooking with, I understand, with PECS. Has that been finalized, sort of what are the terms there, if it has been? And then is there any, you know, Blue Crest is the other company that we are hoping will start producing gas. Is Ada working with Blue Crest in any way? And if you could just expound on your business developing gas in England, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Ada has committed to a $50 million revolving loan for HECS. That type of loan can be recharged literally as payments are made. And so that will provide HECS Fury with working capital for producing more gas from the inlet. We do have applications pending with Blue Crest. We have not gotten to any agreement or commitment yet.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, there has been conversation at this committee and elsewhere about the lack of jack-up rigs in Cook Inlet and how that is a limiting factor on gas production in the inlet, and I'm wondering, has Ada explored bringing a jackup rig up to the inlet? It seems like there is enough work to be done. In fact, I believe that HECS said on the record that they could, just on their own, provide 2 or 3 years of continuous work for a jackup rig. And so I'm wondering if Ada has explored those options.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Ada has been in discussions about jackup rigs with several companies. We don't have a final agreement yet to report out, but we are aware of the benefits that a rig would provide.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
No, thank you, Director. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Klayman.
Let's go back to the $50 million backstop. Has that money been paid out at this point?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, no. There is no final agreement yet with AGDC. Even when there is an agreement, the company performing the feed work is going to pay that itself. It won't draw on any Ada funds. All Ada funds will remain with Ada. It's only in the instance that after feed is complete and the company chooses not to go forward with FID, that there would be any risk to Ada funds. So up until then, the company is spending its own money.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does that mean that right now the discussion of this backup, it hasn't even the commitment to make the backup has not even occurred at this point?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the board has authorized and over three different meetings heard testimony from and met with Glenn Farn and AGDC and has passed a resolution in December authorizing me to complete a negotiation, but we have not signed final documents.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I understand the concept, if this contract is entered into, it will effectively encumber $50 million in ADA assets, but until another event occurs, ADA won't have to pay any money to anybody, but that money will nevertheless be encumbered so it can't be spent on anything else.
Through the chair, Senator Kleeman, that's correct.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And by the time this negotiation is complete, will you be able to identify the specific consideration that ADA would be receiving for essentially encumbering $50 million that can't be used for anything else?
Through the chair, Senator Kleeman, that's the question I'll ask counsel and see what I'm able to reveal legally. I can probably provide a general outline as I have here, but to get into specifics, I have to check with the attorneys.
So, Mr. Rural, I will ask you to do that, and if you could send a response to my office, we'll distribute it to committee members. Follow-up, Senator
Just Klein? Just a brief comment, Madam Yes. Chair. In the world of consideration for encumbering $50 million, I like, in some vague concept, it's sort of nice, we'll get jobs for the state, but it seems to me that the consideration needs to be a whole lot more concrete than just, we're going to see jobs in the future. There needs to be something pretty mm-hmm. darn specific for what the consideration is.
Especially a job like that, work like that generally brings up outsiders,
right.
not residents. Mm-hmm. Senator Hughes, you had another question?
Yeah, just in tagging along, and he did say some monetary benefit too, so I would say that's a pretty specific addition to the jobs. Just wondering, AGDC told us, but I don't know, we're talking about this $50 million being encumbered. What's the time frame? How many years would that – what's the target of getting to the feed? Just wondering how long that $50 million would be encumbered and tied up.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's a good question. It's going to reflect the scope of work that is decided upon by the company for feed, and that can be either a lot or not so much. I think that scope is being worked on. But according to some of the presentations of AGDC and other committees, feed can take as long as 1.5 to 2 years.
Thank you. Follow-up? Oh, no. All right, Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thanks. Is ADA by itself in its own entity rated? And are there bond ratings going up or down for ADA specifically?
Through the chair, ADA is not currently bond rated.
Okay. And then can you tell me about the $532 million in loans financed? And you mentioned at the very beginning that they are essentially banks that come to you that say – do they say they don't have enough money or they don't have enough – or is it risky lending that they don't want to go full out for? Just curious because that's a large, significant part of the portfolio.
Correct. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think it's a combination of both. There can be risk in the loans and then there can be a shortage of equity or cash put into the business. The owner just may be short. They have loan ratios that they're trying to make in order to underwrite the loan. And if ADA can come in at a 6.5% or 6% interest rate and it gets the company over the top and the bank wants to go forward, they still think the owner has a good business plan. But they're laying off a little bit of the risk to ADA, so to speak, then they will go forward with the loan and make the business. And I would add that we have virtually a zero default rate. So the underwriting is still strong, by the initiating bank. And then our side goes through a whole nother underwriting process for our participation.
Follow up, Senator Kosaki?
No, thank you.
All right. Senator Hughes.
Yes, I'm going to ask a question on behalf of Senator Rob Myers. I had a conversation with him, and while we're talking about bank loans and such, there seems to be a gap for small miners going after unconventional type minerals such as antimony. And going to a bank, it doesn't work. The loans are small. You have small business loans. but you don't have, it seems like, the type of financing. You know, you'll a larger Australian company, maybe that will be someone you'll work with. But we seem to have a gap. And it, early on, I don't know what year, our Department of Commerce had a revolving loan fund for miners, similar to DNR's Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. But that fund hasn't been funded since the 90s, and I understand they're going to actually get the fund off their books. Is that something that you have thought about working on? You know, there's a lot of talk about the mining potential and how we shouldn't be so dependent on China, for instance, and the number of minerals and resources that we could go after. Is that something where you could maybe fill that gap, where it's not just for the big outside companies, but our Alaskan miners who want to go after some unconventional but important minerals that are much needed?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's a good question. ADA has basically transferred administration of two small loan programs over to the Department of Commerce, but they're not the specific program, you know, that you describe, which frankly, personally, I think is a really good program. It's run in British Columbia and the Yukon Territories. I think it's up to $100,000, and a miner can, you know, get that fairly easily without really stringent underwriting. The only catch is the miner has to report back to the government what he finds, and so the government can kind of build up a database of where the minerals are. But I can talk to Commissioner Sandy and see about that program. Personally, I think it's got some merit.
Okay, thank you.
Great. If you could and report back to us, that'd be wonderful. Again, I would distribute it to the rest of the committee. Thank you, Mr. Raro. I see no further questions on slide 12. We are approaching halfway in the meeting time.
I'll try to speed up, Madam Chair. This is next slide. 13 is just kind of outline of the different programs we have. Within LPP, the first box in the upper left is the main generator of those block of loans that you see in the pie chart. That's where the banks are coming forward to us for financing. Project finance, the next one over, is what we use to fund projects like Red Dog Mine, individual projects, Alieschem. Conduit revenue bonds is what we use to fund things like a Alaska Native Medical Center or hospital. They have Medicaid funds that we can use as revenue and issue a revenue bond. Energy and resource development, we have a couple different options there. Cook Inlet, you know, reserve-based lending is one of the new programs that's sitting there. Asset ownership, we do own the Red Dog Mine Road and Port and the FedEx Hangar and some others. ADA bonds, we do have authority to bond, but we need to get our rating back in place. That's in a quick rundown, that's our programs.
Very good. Senator Klayman.
What's involved in getting a bond rating back in place? How much will that cost and how long will it take?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I'm not 100% sure. We do have an employee that recently came on that has very good experience with bond ratings and will probably work with the deputy commissioner at revenue, I think, who's also very well experienced in it. But I'm not sure we would incur costs similar to a large entity. We're fairly small in that world. But it is on our list to get up and running.
Would you like to have that pursued and the answer brought back to us, Senator Klayman?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Barrow. I see no other questions on slide 13.
Madam Chair, slide 14 is just a quick statewide snapshot of where our projects are. We are in a number of places all over the state, and the two programs that are run by Commerce, one of those is rural-focused. So there's many other projects that aren't on the map, but we thought we would give the committee, you know, some sense that we are widespread.
Very nice map. Questions? I don't see any. I'll let you go on. And that must take us to slide 16.
Sure. Some specific ADA projects, Madam Chair. Alieschem's interested in building a methanol plant on the North Slope. It's got local support from the community. and the board approved funding that project. We should be getting to final signing soon, but that's one of the first chemical plants, I think, in the state, and it's replacing shipments all the way from Trinidad that are then, you know, barged into Anchorage and then run up the Dalton. So we're excited to get this in place. It's a local, you know, Alaskan type replacement of what was an import. This is the Hex Cook Inlet Revolving Loan line of credit. This will help this company produce Cook Inlet gas for quite a few years. It is rechargeable. It's not a single loan. So as Mr. Hendricks, Hex, and Fury pay down the line of credit with successful production of gas, it the balance goes up again that they can use. So pretty flexible.
Slide 18.
I'm sorry.
Slide 18.
Madam Chair, sorry. Slide 18. This is IGU. I think most folks are familiar with it. They're doing well. They're, I think, going to be transitioning out of Cook Inlet to North Slope, harvest the sourced gas. About 1.5% of Cook Inlet gas should then be available for other use. So every molecule counts, I guess. But they're doing well with sign-ups and additional customers, and I think it's going as the legislature intended.
Thank you. Next slide looks like slide 20.
Sure. These are some of the notes I had about the AGC corporate guarantee. Walking through it, it is a corporate guarantee, basically a commitment by ADA as a contract to set aside those funds. It is not final yet, but it is both limited and conditional. It's limited in the sense that it is for an amount up to a sum certain, and it will reflect only the actual amount of feed work completed. It's not a set amount at $50 million. It's going to reflect actual amount of work completed for feed. It's conditional because we only have to make a payment if Glen Farm chooses not to go forward with FID. If they choose to go forward with FID, they will have paid their own feed costs up to that point, and ADA will just have no liability going forward. So it's a little different structure than just a firm corporate guarantee. You get this, several conditions.
We'll pause here for a moment. Senator Wilkowski, any questions on this slide or the previous few slides? How about you, Senator Dunbar? Any questions?
None at this time, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, and I concur that we'd like to see whatever contract you have between AGDC and the and ADA. And, you know, this is kind of what bothers me, is that we saw this as a budget item and we expected to see it in our budget and somewhere that we're going to have to deal with at our operating budget side. And then all of a sudden it's disappeared and it's now backstopped by ADA, which is, you know, off the books for reasons, and the statutes are listed here, but I've got some concern about that. Because if you could do it that easily, why can't it be done for other projects that are just sitting in our operating budget right now? And we've got, you know, I don't know whether we would have come up with the $50 million or whether it made sense, but it was a legislative decision to make, and now it's not. And I don't know if you have any comment to that.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I guess I would split it into two different issues, right? The appropriation was clearly in the legislative's arena to work on or discuss, but the need for that appropriation changed as we worked on the project, and we found a way to do a conditional guarantee that has the funds not leaving ADA's bank, so to speak. Before that, you know, the thought was that we are going to have to do a letter of credit, we're going to have to transfer funds out of ADA's hands, and that we would lose the ability to earn interest even, you know, on those funds. And so because of the changed circumstances from when the appropriation was initially thought of to now, we felt it best not to burden the legislature with the appropriation request, you know, in a tight budget year. We can manage it and get by, you know, without that added weight, I guess, to the budget.
Any follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
No.
All right. So you must have made that decision after December 15th.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Senator Klayman.
On the same topic, the logic you're describing is that ADA figured because we're actually not writing the check today or very soon, it's not an appropriation the legislature needs to make. All that ADA is doing is saying, well, we won't spend the money because it's encumbered. Is that the analysis that ADA is using and saying why this doesn't become a legislative appropriation?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, it's actually a little different than that. It's the statutory policy decisions, I guess, that previous legislatures have made at least twice, where they said they wanted ADA's assets and funds that it earns to be completely separate from the state and the state's credit versus state, quote-unquote, state funds that are subject to the Executive Budget Act. And so those decisions were made, you know, decades ago, and that the authority to make decisions over ADA assets, not state assets, would vest in the board, subject to reporting and except for the operating budget. The operating budget continues to be subject to legislative review.
Well, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me ask the question a little bit differently. Let's say that the contract comes out and it says you will put $50 million in some brokerage place that's independent of ADA that will sit there as the guarantee for this project because the people were guaranteeing, I guess, for whatever reason, aren't sure the money will be there. They want it in some separate third-party controlled investment account. Does that then become an appropriation? The legislature needs to approve, to write the check as part of this contract to go and sit in the third party holding?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, no. And the reason is because the assets of ADA that would be placed into that holding account would still be earnings, interest, et cetera, funds of ADA's. And there's a strict dividing line that the legislature wanted from ADA funds and earnings versus state funds and state bond ratings and other things. There's 3 to 4 statutes that make it very clear the two are supposed to be completely separate.
Follow up.
Related, Madam Chair, where did the $50 million figure come from? Who decided that was the amount of the backstop?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the $50 million figure was provided by AGDC. It is still being discussed. We don't have a final number yet. But what's perhaps more important than the $50 million figure itself is that ADA's liability will be limited to that value of the actual feed work completed. That could be far less.
Follow up.
Just more of a comment than a question. It seems to me because on the slide itself it says that it may be considerably less than the $50 million. It certainly seems to me, to the extent we're offering the backstop, that backstop sounds like just on the language of your slide alone and ought to be considerably less than the $50 million in terms of risk sharing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, and before we leave this slide, you've mentioned several times that, you know, the board authorized this. Just for review for the public, where do the board members come from?
Through the chair, there's 7 board members. Chairman Pruz is an Anchorage resident. Member Kendig, Vice Chair Kendig, is from the Valley. Member Fogle is Anchorage. Let's see. Member Viv Lamour is Fairbanks. There's 2 commissioner members, Commissioner Sandy and Commissioner Crum. And then there's Member Elledge is from Anchorage.
And they're appointed by the governor?
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
And does the legislature confirm these appointees?
No, ma'am. I don't believe so.
You are correct. They do not. All right. There's no one from rural Alaska?
Through the chair, there's not a member that's from a rural Alaska region right now.
Thank you. And what are the qualifications to be appointed to the ADA board?
Through the chair, I'm not sure there's specific qualifications in statute, but generally they're looking for individuals with experience in energy, business, finance, things like that.
Thank you. Any other questions on slide 20? Seeing none, we'll go on to slide 21.
Madam Chair, this slide gets into a little bit more of the legalities, I guess, of ADA and its authority to take action with its assets. These statutes are some of the ones that talk about the separation, the strict separation of ADA assets from any state funds, any state real property, anything that the state owns is outside of ADA's control or authority.
Any questions on this slide? All right, we'll move on to slide 22.
Madam Chair, I thought it'd be helpful if we talked a little bit about some of the things that are different, that ADA's views is different with this project. One is that ADA is focused on phase one of the pipeline project. This is the pipeline that would run from the North Slope south and would provide domestic gas only supply for South Central. There's some bullets here you're probably familiar with, the Wood Mackenzie report that shows the positive economic value for phase one. The ADA board, I think it is important to just put on the record briefly, Madam Chair, that the ADA board did hold multiple meetings on this topic, I think three total. So we did spend months and months in review. One thing that I think is important is that President Trump has come out and stated his support for the project, and he seems to be approaching international trade on a transactional basis. That is, you know, if you do something for the United States, you may not have tariffs imposed, or, you know, it seems like a completely transactional trade world, you know, now with President Trump in charge. And some of the things he spoke about with Prime Minister Ishiba are investments in the U.S., and I believe the Prime Minister committed to $1 trillion in investments in the U.S. Some of that could go to Alaska LNG. I think the project's high on the president's list to get done. And, you know, the response from the Japanese side, and frankly, since that meeting, six other Southeast Asian countries have come forward and said, we would also like to buy gas. So it's an interesting dynamic, I think, one that wasn't there before on the project.
So I'm looking at the second bullet point. You call out the Wood Mackenzie report. Mm-hmm. You said that the board itself, the ADA board, after multiple meetings, you said there'd been at least three meetings. So we also had a report, a presentation of the Wood Mackenzie report, and identified several cost drivers that were not taken into account in that Wood Mackenzie report, including questions of the source of the gas, allegedly the Pantheon project at $1. An MCF. That project hasn't even assured that they have gas that's producible yet. So the board took all of those issues into account as they scoured the Wood Mackenzie report for credibility?
Through the chair, we did look at the Pantheon publicly available reports. They describe, I think, on pages 5 and 6 of their last annual report, as having a gas sales agreement in place, and their well results, according to that public report, are positive for 6.6 trillion cubic feet of gas. Understanding that, you know, they are not in production yet, but moving toward that, the board was aware of those facts.
And the Wood Mackenzie report, the pieces that were not included in the analysis that would have been financial drivers for the cost.
Through the chair, you may have to inform me what items you're thinking of.
Well, specifically, just off the top of my head, the pipeline that would have to go from the main gas pipeline, the offtake to Fairbanks itself, was not considered. It appeared to be a pipeline that went directly from the North Slope down to South Central. It was not, in fact, supplying Alaska by bypassing Fairbanks.
Through the chair, I'm aware of that issue. Also aware that there were some solutions, you know, described for that in our board meetings, and the board, you know, did express interest in that issue. So they did hear about it. They were aware of it. I think they would support gas for Fairbanks, of course. But you know, there are some opportunities, I think, for that to occur. I'm not sure I can speak about it.
Yes. Well, we understand there are opportunities as well, but it would change the calculation of the cost of the gas. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah,
questions?
Thank you. Madam Chair, yeah, you mentioned when you were on the fourth bullet regarding President Trump. So AGDC came before this committee, before that announcement was made, and then subsequent, they came early beginning of this week after that announcement had been made. And you said that I believe that this is good news. Do you have information that we don't know about this line? Because it was, I guess I felt pretty hesitant that we weren't getting the information before. And you just said, I believe. So I'd like to hear about that.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, where I went to get some news about it was the Japan Times and Japanese media. They reported in more detail, I think, from the Japanese side of what was committed to by the Prime Minister, and they talked about the country, Japan's interest being securing the U.S.-Japanese defense agreement, number one, and avoiding 25% tariffs, and that in exchange, you know, there would be $1 trillion in new investment headed to the United States and purchases of AKLNG. I can provide those articles to the chair if that that would be helpful.
Yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Further questions? Senator Wilkowski or Senator Dunbar, questions?
No questions.
All right. Moving on to slide 23.
Slide 23, Chair. Everyone's aware we've got a gas shortage issue in the rail belt. The most expensive option of gas is imports of LNG, and we all want to get to the lowest option, which is the large-scale project at $2.32. So the Phase 1 pipeline that the board was particularly interested in does de-risk to some extent once it's built, you know, the additional build-out of the project. So I just wanted to mention that. We talked about Great Bear, at least in their publicly reported documents that they have to file with regulators. They are claiming to have large volumes of gas and being successful, and that the agreement with AGDC is for $1 per million BTU, so significantly lower, I think, than any options that have been on the table in the past. They're still in process of developing that project, of course, but it does look positive at this point. At least they're reporting very positive. I thought I'd just mention that Great Bear is willing to proceed with providing gas without a claim or a requirement of a constitutional amendment for fiscal certainty. That's something that, as the chair, I think is aware probably more than other legislators from her previous hearings, that was an issue at one time, but it doesn't seem to be an issue for Great Bear. And then the other thing that's different, I think, from previous years is that the gas supply would not have that negative effect on production of oil at Prudhoe because you're not needing that gas to pressure the oil to get it out. And so previously, the producers were concerned that drawing gas off of Prudhoe would result in losses of billions of barrels of oil, and it probably would have definitely cost quite a bit of oil to pull gas off. But the supply from Great Bear does not have that concern.
So, Mr. Rohr, you're asserting here that AOGCC would not have to be involved in that gas offtake from the Pantheon leases. Is that what I'm understanding you say?
Through the chair, I don't know if there's a way to not have a hearing with AOGCC, but it certainly doesn't seem to have that offsetting effect where you lose, you know, large volumes of oil from the production of the gas.
Thank you. You know, I am concerned about the first bullet point, second to the last sentence, where it says to get to the low $2.32 per MMBTU price. That number would require the full project, gas treatment and export. And that is not what AGDC is asserting to us is this project. Because to get to that full project is $44 billion plus. So I'm concerned that that's being identified in this presentation that the public might see. And I feel it is deceptive.
Sure. Madam Chair, I took the numbers from the previous presentations of AGDC, and you are correct that ADA is not involved in that larger scale project. That is where I got the numbers from.
I do understand that, but the public doesn't know that when they see it written here, that is a $44 billion plus project. Further questions on slide 23. Senator Hughes.
It's not exactly a question on that, but I see we're going to move on to business loans. And when we're talking about Pantheon and development on the North Slope, it makes me think of ANWR. And you had bid on leases back, I think it was in 2021, and they've been kind of tied up. And I'm just wondering, once those are out of limbo, do you think there's going to be any interest, or are you aware that there might be interest by any major producers to explore and develop on those leases?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we expect to get our leases officially back in our hands legally. They were canceled by the Biden administration. We've taken advantage of the time that we haven't been able to work the leases by reviewing all the geologic information and having a new report done. We've reviewed the 2D seismic from 1987 and reviewed a lot of other information and reports. And the outcome of those reports is extremely positive. Billions of barrels of oil recoverable, economically recoverable, trillions of cubic feet of gas. So we anticipate that once we have the leases back, we will be able to find an entity that's interested in buying the leases or working with us to develop them somehow. We would also like to do a 3D seismic, you know, 2D's a little fuzzy, I guess, so to speak, but 3D, if we can get the 3D in right in the areas where we believe we need to be, that once we have that 3D seismic and it proves up the quantity of oil and where it's located, we think we'll be able to move forward with ANWR.
Thank you. I'd just like to hear more about that when they are freed up and you're at the point where you're going to be doing that work, and just keep us updated on it.
Through the chair, yes, ma'am.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, since Senator Hughes brought it up, there were – I don't remember exactly how many leases on the shore of the ANWR, the refuge, but it seemed like not all of them were taken. Most of them were taken by us. I mean, by extension, the state through ADA. And then you just mentioned that you'll be potentially doing 3D seismic on the leases that are, you believe, coming back to us. Do we have any way of making sure that the costs that you are bearing on those with its 3D seismic will be if somebody else takes those or buys them from us, that those will be built into that.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we'd certainly try to recover all our expenses and more.
I like that. Thanks.
All right. I did want to go back to slide 22 and your comment, your bullet point about President Trump. Second to the last sentence says, also, increased LNG purchases from the U.S. and a joint venture linked to Alaska oil and gas. Is the joint venture between the U.S. and Japan, is Japan somehow engaged in purchase or paying for some of this project?
To the chair, that note in the slide is simply a report out from what was written in the Japanese media.
I see.
I'm not familiar with any details specifically to a joint venture.
But these are words from the Japanese media.
Correct.
Gotcha. Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. All right. Thank you. So I see no further questions. So that takes us on to the ADA loan programs. Slide 25.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to Senator Hughes' question early about small businesses, these are the two programs that are outsourced to the Department of Commerce to operate. They're capitalized with ADA funds. And these one focuses on rural Alaska. The other focuses on small businesses. So very low caps in some ways for small businesses, but very important because we see businesses start small, advance, and grow. And I think these are some of the most important loans that we make.
Question,
Senator Hughes.
So considering that and these programs, which I'm glad they exist, can you tell us, based on both number and the total value of those loans going out, what percentage go to Alaskan-owned companies?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'm not aware of any loan through these programs that goes to a non-Alaskan company.
And
follow-up?
That's good news. Glad to say it. What about for things outside these two programs? Do you have any sense of what is going to Alaska-owned versus outside of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'm not aware, even for the much larger loan participation program, of any loans going to non-Alaskan companies.
Okay, thank you. And on this slide, too, Madam
Chair. Yes, follow-up, Senator Hughes.
We were talking about jobs earlier, and Northern Economics had question how many your return on investment as far as jobs, since that's a big part of it. And my understanding is in Senate Finance, you are going to commission a study on that. Is that underway? Is that going to be available for us at some point in the future?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes. We have had some delays with that report. The company that was writing the report, the three different persons at different times who were in charge of it had left employment, and so it became a little difficult to get it completed, but we are looking forward to getting that done.
Thank you, and just a comment that I look forward to it as well. I think it'll be helpful information since it's part of your mission. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Moving on to slide 26.
Madam Chair, this is a slide on the loan participation program. Some highlights, ADA, through this program. This is the program that matches local banks, local Alaska banks, who come forward to ADA and say, hey, we really like this business, but we need a little help to get it off the ground. Roughly $21 to $25 million a year, I think, in these loans is done. We have a large loan to the Anchorage Hotel. There's an Anchorage Hotel downtown that's kind of a larger loan than we usually do through this program, but that's going to go forward and should create, you know, quite a few jobs there.
Very good. Seeing no questions, I think that takes us to slide 27.
Right. This is a specific project that I mentioned, Madam Chair, the Wild Birch Hotel, former Senator Begich. That project's moving ahead quickly. I think it's going to be a successful one, and it's one of our largest loans done through this program.
All right, I see no questions. Next slide.
Sun Mountain Development, Madam Chair, is out in Wasilla. This has, again, been a really successful project for Ada and for the business owners. It's continuing to grow, and we look forward to participating even for more in the future.
Very good. Yes, Senator Klayman.
Just on the slide, and also with regard to the earlier slide about the Wild Birchwood Hotel, when it says 90% Ada participation, what does that mean compared to the commercial bank specifically?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Klayman, 90% participation means the bank came forward with a request that the bank perform 10% of the loan and that Ada take on 90% of the value of the loan.
And so that means on the downtown Anchorage, that 70%, it means it's a 30% bank funding and 70% Ada funding.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to slide 29.
Madam Chair, this is another example of a LPP, Loan Participation Program project in Fairbanks, just completed or committed to by the board in their last meeting, Golden Heart Waste Management. We'll be building a new building and hiring more folks and expanding in Fairbanks. So it's a positive, real positive project for Fairbanks.
Very good. Slide 30.
Madam Chair.
31, huh, I guess.
Yeah. Madam Chair, we're transitioning a little bit into projects, resource development projects. This is the Red Dog Mine. Ada owns the road and the port, and that we're really hoping, of course, that the expansion road and other work goes forward. They're on a tight schedule, 2031, I think. They have to have another ore source. So, but our involvement has been really helpful for all the parties, and we hope that new mine gets going and stays in place for another 20, 30 years.
Very good.
Got it.
Did Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah, thanks. Just a really quick question on the – you said that Ada owns the road and the port. What happens when whatever company decides not to be there any longer? Do you still own the road? What do you do with it at that point?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that's a good question. We've been diving into the different land ownership agreements. Part of the road runs through Cape Krusenstern National Park, and there are agreements going back to the very beginning that require different parties than Ada to remediate the road. But the large tailings pond and some of the other environmental work that's needed at the mine even after it closes will likely mean that the road stays in place because we've got to get equipment, people, and monitors and other things up to the environmental remediation locations.
Very good follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. And this is a little different than I think most private mines, or that private mines, they own the responsibility for DR&R, and in this case, the state actually owns that. And where is that on the books? You
sure.
Own it. You're going to have to keep it. You're going to have to make sure that it's sound for 1,000 years.
Right. So Chair Senator Kawasaki, the obligation to remediate the mine remains with NANA and TEC. Okay. That's on NANA land, and it's a TEC-operated mine, so they're going to perform the remediation for that. For the road, roughly two-thirds of the road, I believe, is on Cape Krusenstern or other land, and I believe the agreements with the federal government require NANA or TEC to remediate that part of the road if and when it's ever advisable to take the road out, because the tailings pond will need some monitoring and maintenance and other things for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Good. Moving on to slide 32.
Madam Chair, this is Anwar. Ada has 7 leases in Anwar. We assert that we have a valid right to those leases, and the Trump administration has issued an executive order that those leases should be transferred back to Ada. So we're anticipating getting those leases back, at which point we would try to move forward finally with our 3D seismic and then have the data that we need to develop or sell and go from there.
Good. Slide 33.
Sure. This is an estimate actually from the federal government on the value of developing ANWR if it was developed. State of Alaska royalties and State of Alaska taxes are roughly $2 billion a year. That's estimates, I guess, from Northern Economics. But it does show there's extreme potential value in that northwest corner of the 1002 area. And our, frankly, our geologic reports to date are confirming that value.
Thank you. Slide 34.
Ambler Access Project. This is a road into the Ambler Mining District that Anilka in 1980, Congress said the state should be allowed to have and access those. Those were known large deposits. The Ambler Mining District's one of the estimated to be one of the 30 largest deposits in the world. So very prospective, lots of known ore values. And the Biden administration denied our right-of-way request, even though it's in statute. The Trump administration issued an EO similar to ANWR that says, you know, you need to issue the right-of-way. So we think we'll get our right-of-way and finally be able to proceed forward.
And just for clarity, that right-of-way is through the gates of the Arctic National Park and Preserve, through the small arm that reaches down.
Correct. That's one part of the right-of-way, Madam Chair. The other part is at the very beginning of the road through the yellow, mm-hmm. and that's BLM general land that's in PLO 5150.
Very good. Thank you. Slide 35.
This is another video with Chief Fred. I don't know that we need to play it, Madam Chair, but Fred's point here was we have, and frankly, Larry Westlake, another elder, you know, they're saying, look, we know there's issues or questions about building the mine and or building a road to the mine, but what happens to our communities if we don't is the question that they're posing to their members and their tribal members. Basically, if we don't do something, we're going to continue to lose, you know, residents of the communities to Fairbanks, and they're just going to shrink away.
Very good. Senator Klayman, you have a question.
Yes, sir. With respect to the Ambler Road, looking back at slide 33, you had a slide that shows estimates based on federal information that you received about the likely oil taxes and the resources that are there. Do you have anything else, anything from the federal government comparable on the Ambler access to the mining resources that are at the end of the road that would tie into what you're projecting?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, there is a report. I don't have it embedded here, but I can provide it to the chair and yourself.
Please.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah. What you just mentioned, like Montrose, probably the most recent mine that I can think of that's fairly new, opened up just recently, is the bane to some people's existence between Tok and Fairbanks. Did that one require Kinross, or did that one that Kinross owns require help from ADA?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, no.
Okay. Follow up, like, you know, Fort Knox was around when I was in high school, and that one was sanctioned somewhere like right in my high school year, and I remember all the debates on that. Well, did that one require Kinross, or sorry, did that Kinross facility require ADA?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. I guess where I'm going then is just asking why some of these bigger projects, I'd say Ambler Road is a big project, why we feel that needs state help where the other ones didn't.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think the initial state involvement with the Ambler Road came through the 1980 Anilka, where the state was granted the right-of-way. But in addition, there were funds appropriated, I think, under former Governor Parnell, specifically for Ambler access. It was a road to resource, you know, that he wanted to pursue. And so state DOT pursued it for several years, and then they felt that it was better transitioned over to ADA.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah, and I'm thank you. I'm familiar. It was roughly $8 million DOT. Now what we're talking about is potentially a $500 million project. Is that about right?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, somewhere in that area.
Okay. And I guess if these companies that are interested in doing it, if they're asking for the help, if they will be on the hook for the roads themselves, the management of the roads, the maintenance of the roads, or will ADA be responsible for those?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, ADA anticipates using the Red Dog model where the mines pay for the road and pay for the maintenance. ADA could own part, all, or part of the asset, but we won't be actively involved in either maintenance or paying for the road. I mean, we may issue bonds, but
so if we were to issue bonds and the I don't know what's out there, and I don't know if anybody really does, but if it were less economic than they figured, what happens at that point?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we won't proceed until the mines are secure enough that they are going to pay for the road, commit to it as a contract, and they won't know that until they complete some additional drilling. So there is a bornite preliminary economic analysis that was just issued, I think, in the last 30 days that's available on YouTube. I can send the link. Yeah, but that preliminary assessment shows really large amounts of copper and other minerals, very positive for the economics.
Okay. Thank you. I guess one other question on
follow-up.
So Pebble Mine was one that was discussed about 20 years ago, and a lot of us went out there to check it out. Have they asked for any support from ADA at any time?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Senator Klayman.
I just want to echo some of the concerns that Senator Kawasaki's questions have raised. He mentioned the two mines in Fairbanks. I almost always go back to the Kennecott mine, where they not only didn't come to ADA for money to build a road, they didn't even come to ADA for money to build a railroad. And I've just always thought, in the analogy of getting the cart before the horse, it certainly seems that to the extent there's road building, we ought to bide our time and wait until somebody's actually come and said this mine is valuable to develop, and then figure out the most effective way to get the ore out to wherever it needs to go. And it just seems like a very, very odd sequence in play, particularly odd because, as I understand, the idea would be you'd haul ore over a road a long way to get it to the haul road and then put it on the haul road and haul it down the haul road and then put it on a railroad in Fairbanks and take it to some ship place where you can put the ore on a ship and take it to a processing facility that's probably not even in Alaska. And I keep wondering, isn't it a shorter distance to the coast to the west than all these connections? And I keep coming back to the feeling this cart is before the horse when we haven't really seen the results from the mine. But curious how you keep pushing forward with one where the mining company hasn't come and said, we've got a winner here.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, there are economic analysis drill results in place for the Arctic mine. They've established there's roughly 13 years of mine life at that site. The bornite preliminary economic analysis identifies another 20 to 25 years of mine life. And so there is quite a bit of information. These mines are, frankly, pretty old areas that have been prospected for decades. And I think Kennecott was actually one of the owners of some patents out there at one point in the 50s. But there is a lot and lot of geologic information known about these sites, and the drilling continues. The mines are investing quite a bit. And there is a very large tract of claims just off the Dalton, which is held by South 32, which is also appearing to be very prospective. So I can try to get a summary of everything that's known or confirmed into the committee, if that would help understand where exactly the mines are.
Thank you, Mr. Ruaro. And I will underscore the validity of what Mr. Ruaro said. The Ambler Mining Project area is well documented significant assets there. And the Kennecott Project was long before Ada existed, built by millionaires that owned railroads in the lower 48. But moving on, we will go to slide 36 for the West Susitna Project.
Right. Madam Chair, this is the slide on the West Susitna Project. This is, again, a road to resources, in a sense, to mines, an antimony gold mine at the end of the road, also opening up recreation, though, along the way. Again, this was a project that the legislature sent money to DOT, I believe, or to Ada for. We're continuing to progress that and go forward with that.
Thank you. And, yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, just a general question on West Susitna and Ambler Road. When Ada will, if Ada develops a road like that, like they did up in Kotzebue with the Red Dog Mine, are those roads publicly utilized, or will they have permits they need to get, or will they have, like, what's the situation about those publicly financed roads?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the Ambler Road is intended to be limited access for industrial haul, although medevacs, commercial use by the local communities, those will remain available for use on the road. The West Susitna Access Project is a little different, broader access by the public for the recreational values.
Very good. Your last slide is, it looks like, 38, Ada, new opportunities, new issues.
Right. Madam Chair, Ada is obviously, as many are aware, tech is moving quickly, AI is moving quickly, data centers are seem to be sprouting up everywhere. And I just wanted to let the chair and the members know that Ada is following this trend. We're looking for opportunities to invest, and I think we will hopefully have some very positive returns from our investments coming forward. But it is a fast moving area of development, and we're keeping an eye on it. We're watching for opportunities, not really maybe so much the large hyperscale data centers, you know, in Alaska that require massive amounts of electricity, but smaller communities that may have an excess that can take, you know, much smaller levels of GPUs and equipment, but can help balance that power demand so that, for example, a community that may have excess power or experiences excess power as a result of a business leaving, we can almost backfill with some GPUs and keep that power cost level so the remaining citizens are not hit with a huge increase in rates. So we're just wanted to let the committee know we're watching those and looking for opportunities, not so much on the hyperscale level, but smaller options. Chemical production, we're looking at that with AliEsChem. We'll keep looking into that. Natural gas is like a base feedstock, I've found out, for a lot of different things, from jet fuel to methanol to ultra-low sulfur diesel. So we're active in that area. And then we're looking at opportunities to try to get some secondary processing of minerals instead of just shipping them out. Antimony probably presents a really good opportunity there because it's needed by the military for ammunition. And I believe China's just banned, you know, exports of antimony to the U.S. So just wanted to highlight a couple areas we're working on.
Thank you. I will let you know that we had Cordova Electric Cooperative here recently. They have maximized their energy production and even invited a data center in. I think they may have done that without Ada's assistance. So there is creativity out there.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your presentation today, Mr. Raro. This concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting will be Monday, February 17th. On the agenda will be SB 47, Chukot State Park easements, Senate Bill 29, Big Game Commercial Services Board, Senate Bill 30, State Park permits for disabled veterans, and Senate Bill 61, electronic device recycling. This meeting is now adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:04 p.m.